Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leading Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. What's going on, everybody? Merry Christmas. I hope everybody has got done with their shopping. If not, you're probably out there struggling away, trying to get through those horrific lines, man. I got up early in the morning. I had to go down and do some last-minute shopping myself. And I got to tell you, even like going in, I got up so early, I was BSing with Gabriel for a minute. But that wasn't why I was up early. I had little Paulie Maunaji over there doing his rant. So that really, honestly, that's what got me up. But you know what? He was almost like an alarm clock for me. What was that?
Funny. Well, I woke up super early, as I usually do. I saw that I had my phone off all last night. So I saw.
Right.
I saw that you guys had a conversation last night, you know, and it was something like 20 at replies in my, you know, in my Twitter feed.
It wasn't even a conversation. I mean, let me straighten it out. It wasn't a conversation. What it was is that somebody tagged my name along with your name into a conversation, whether they were talking to him before or they were asking him a question. Then what it got down to is that this guy always goes off in this rant calling you a fanboy and this and that, and do you have an agenda? So I asked a simple question, which was, what is this agenda that you're talking about? Because, see, the agenda that people are calling him out on, obviously that's starting to, you know, it's starting to sting his ego. Because the fact is that the wool's been pulled, you know, that sheet has been pulled over everybody's eyes. We can basically see what his agenda is, which is every second, every minute that he can, he's going to take a shot at Manny Pacquiao. Now, this is the funny thing, is that I either get a lot of emails about is Floyd and Pac going to fight? Where's Rock Nation stance at? Al Heyman, what do you think of this and that? But of late, it's been, do you think that Paulie's agenda, because of what has been going on Twitter and what he's been saying, is really out of jealousy? And I can't answer that question. All I can do is, well, you got to kind of look at what this guy's been doing. So when this guy talks about other people's agenda, I think he's really revealing that he has an agenda and doesn't want to be called on it. Now, when I asked him that, he got butthurt saying, oh, you know, you and your five listeners and et cetera. And I noticed this guy kind of always falls into this, you know, elementary type of way of trying to get out of an argument, you can kind of say, you know. And that's when I answered back to him. I'm going to be honest. I got tired of his shit. Got tired of hearing this guy over and over talk to people on there. And let's be honest, the only people that he's talking to are really uneducated fans or fans that are just not even fans, just people that are on Twitter that just want to talk to a so-called semi-celebrity. That's it.
Right.
That's all it is. And when you ask the guy a real question, he goes away. Okay. And then that's when I went shopping. I had to go do my stuff. And then I came back, and this guy's still going at it. So I'm gonna put this out there, and this is all on me. This is my question. Paulie Maunaji, do you do drugs, bro? Because how in the hell at 12, and this the first tweets were at like barely going to be hit like midnight, right? And, dude, I'm going to bed, Gabriel. I'm going to bed. And this guy's hitting me, you know.
Midnight. I was in bed. I was like,
right.
Already asleep.
Right, and I'm looking at it, and that's when I answered him back, because I was like, what the hell? And I'm thinking, after I stopped with him, I was like, dude, I'm done with this guy. I'm done tweeting. I said, hey, thank you. Just untag me. That was another thing. I said, untag me. untag me from the conversation, take me off the conversation, blah, 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 because you know what, I wasn't in the mood to sit there and go back and forth over a million tweets with this guy, and you know what, he does more talking than listening. And
the thing that gets me about him, just so that we, you know, the listeners, you know, they hear about our beef, but they want to be let in on it. So this has been going on for a while. Paulie and I have been going back and forth. We had Paulie on the show.
That's where it started. That's where it started. Edwise. Right, right.
If you listen
but
to that interview, you actually hear me, kind of check out, actually, about, I don't know how long it was. It was a long interview. But I couldn't, other than being rude and, like, interrupting and, like, yelling, and even I tried that a couple times, I couldn't get in. He's just his whole thing is just raise his voice and, like, talk over you. It's really rude. And he doesn't listen. And so I look at him on Twitter, and he knows just enough to be dangerous. He knows just enough to give people the wrong advice, the wrong facts. He's accused me. I don't want to make this so about me or about us, but obviously it's a news of the day. It's something that's been going on. It's more interesting than most that's been going on. And we do have stuff that's kind of related in terms of testing to talk about. But it's a guy that's, you know, kind of accusing me of being a fake journalist, denigrating our show. We've had, you know, the late Hussein Suleiman. We've had everybody on this show. And I'm not really – I've stopped competing with other shows. I don't really pay attention to boxing unless it's, you know, a subject that I really care about or the fights. I don't really read a lot of folks. I read Steve. So Paulie has got this kind of agenda against Manny. At the same time, you remember in that interview, David, this is what stuck in my craw. Not only could we not talk, but at the end of the interview, he accused you and I of vigilantism. Don't be, you know, I don't like that vigilantism. I don't like that vigilante stuff. He wouldn't come out and say what he was talking about. And it reminded me of a conversation I had with Andre Ward that was off the record, but he made a similar comment. And as I asked him about it, it turned out he was talking about the Floyd Mayweather stuff. And a lot of people are very confused about all what happened there. I mean, we talked about it endlessly on the show. We go back in the archives and you can find it. But the thing with Paulie, just long story short, too late, but is that he doesn't have his facts straight. He's kind of selling himself as an expert, and he's doing the very thing that he told us not to do, which is vigilantism. He's going after Pacquiao, and I don't care if you're saying that, you know, he was on this Barry Bonds-like run, and you got to trust your eyes. He only knocked out, as you and Dave, you and I were talking, he only knocked out Hatton. I mean, he stopped Cotto, but it was on cuts and, like, accumulation. But he's doing this, I mean, it's not due process, and accusing me of doing the same thing in the Floyd situation without knowing the facts. And I didn't do that. I didn't accuse Floyd and just go running around spreading a rumor.
Well, I think this is what...
It's frustrating to me, and that's why I can't go at him. It's course correction, essentially, is the thing. And then runs away.
This is the thing that gets
me. Volumes.
Right, right. Well, this is the thing that with me is that, you know, I was there... I recorded the situation between him and Sean Porter, which he was obviously accusing them.
Yes.
And then now he's denying it, that ever happened. That conversation never happened. And that's why I was pointing out, like, dude, I was right there. Then he says, like, no, that's not, you know, that wasn't, you should have recorded it from the beginning. But then he goes on and saying that it is true, in other words. So that's where that's why I'm like, look, people, focus on what this guy says. It's full of shit. And that's why I ask again. I think the guy's on drugs, man. I can care less if he gets mad when I'm saying that I said he's on drugs. Because I'm telling you, midnight, I'm pretty sure in New York it's 3 in the morning. Dude, do you not sleep? I mean, do you have to answer everybody? And here's another thing, folks, that I got to point out is that if you watch the guy, ask anybody right now. Ask him a Manny Pacquiao question. He feels very obligated. Obligated. A little too obligated to answer it and to prove his point. Now, when somebody does that over and over and over, there's an agenda. You know? I'm sorry. I don't answer everybody in terms of a boxing question because sometimes I already know where some of it – like, I got sucked into it with this moron, this kid that was on. I won't even give his name and all that, but he was an idiot defending Paulie that – it was so bad, he was even worse than Paulie in terms of trying to make sense of something. He was taking the conversation far from what we were talking about. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can.
Yeah.
you can call in to 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing in here. We'll talk some past week fights, but hey, we're going to be having the Mexican-American heavyweight Andy Ruiz come through, which he fought this past Saturday. I got to tell you this, before anything, because I know the first thing that's going to be the criticism from anybody that hears that we're having him on is like, oh, the guy's, you know, the guy's fat and woo-woo-woo-woo. And with, yes, that's the obvious, people. But let's point the other obvious about the guy. The kid can box. There's no doubt about that. The kid can box. Here, I got, this is the question that I got for Andy Ruiz when he calls in, when we call him into the show and we get to talk to him, is this. Because of the fact that everybody, the criticism is this, and this is, I think this is a very valid criticism about Andy Ruiz, okay, is the weight issue. Because you look at his weight and you go like, obviously this guy's not taking his chance in the sport very serious, right? I mean, that's the thought, right, Gabriel?
Yeah.
But I wonder this, and I asked you this question too. I was off the air right when I had told you that we're going to have him on here. But I asked anybody out there too that's tuning in, listening. We're going to be patching in some fight fans right now as well. But I ask you this: if the guy loses weight, think about this. If he loses weight, now he's not the very tallest heavyweight out there. But if he was to lose weight, and if you look at his body, in order for him to have more of a trim physique, or boxer per se type of body, how many pounds do you think that he's got to shed there, Gabriel? What would be the amount of pounds that you think that would be more of a boxer physique where you say, okay, this guy is serious about boxing?
That's a good question, because we had talked before I saw the fight, you know, and I was sitting there kind of watching the fight going, you know, I wonder, you know, what it is, you know, like 40? Is it 40 pounds? 267 down, you know, like 227? Is he going to look good there? Is it 210, 215? I mean, he's got to deal with the big guys, so he's got to maintain some size. So I don't think he goes below, let's say, 225, 220. But even then, is he going to be body beautiful? Or is he going to just look like kind of like a shorter Chris Areola?
Right, exactly. So I wonder this, is that, in order to get this trim and to have a body where most folks are going like, okay, now he's serious about fighting. I told you this. Do you really think he's going to be a heavyweight? I don't think so. I don't even think if he's able to get to the cruiserweight division, his body's going to have that look of I'm serious in terms of being cut up. I'm eating properly. I look at this guy going, he might be another dude that should make a lightweight division body type. But at the same time, how good would he be at that weight with guys that are equally as fast and probably a bit stronger than him at a light heavyweight division, where with the massive fatness that he has, I'm sorry, Andy, I had to say that, but the mass, you look at the body weight there, you kind of think that, is there a strong possibility that he understands that he could probably be a lot quicker and more mobile than more of the bigger guys, because, you know, he doesn't really belong in the heavyweight division. But how good is his chin? I mean, well, I saw Saturday night. I got to tell you, he does take a shot pretty good. But was it really against a very serious and dangerous puncher? Like, let's say in terms of like Stiverne, Gabriel, could he take a punch like that? I don't know.
Well, I think with Andy right now, you know, a lot of it is just he's not operating at 100% with that body, you know? And he's... What I worry for him is that it's always going to be the story. He's got good skills for a fat guy, you know? And I think he's got more than that to offer. I think, you know, there's an explosiveness that can be brought out. I'm curious to get him on I want to talk about who's his trainer, you know, what does he do, you know? How does he approach his training? Because it's, you know, you think about the heavyweights, they're kind of a different animal than everybody else. They don't have to worry about their weight. And so with that comes a certain responsibility to be in like top shape. But what is that for that particular body type? You know, it's a great question. And so I think, you know, looking at Andy, like I'm very curious, does he, Does he do any sort of explosive training, like sprint training? Does he, you know, what's his running regimen like? That'd be the first thing. You know, what's the nutrition like too? I mean, is he eating all organic food, trying to, or is he, you know, kind of just barely getting by? I mean, is he making good enough money to eat well? And people would say, well, look at him, we know he's eating well. But there's a difference between eating a lot and eating well, you know?
Right, right, definitely.
Is he a soda guy? Is he a beer guy? Like, where is his weight coming from, you know? You don't just balloon up and wait for no reason. So, you know, I'm not going to get all Dr. Oz on him or whatever, but, you know, I'm very curious to see, you know, what that all is about.
Absolutely. I'm very curious to kind of hear what he, you know, his response to, because I'm pretty sure he's heard the criticism. He's had to have heard the criticism. And how does he respond back to that? You know, how does it affect him? Obviously, it's not affecting him when he gets in the ring where it counts, but it's got to affect him in terms of hearing it outside the ring and while he goes to training. It's got to always be in the back of your head, you know? You know what, this Saturday you had all the Al Heyman fighters get up there and do their thing. Gary Russell, I think, was by far the one guy that I wanted to see in terms of where he kind of stands. He got in with Chris Martin. I thought Chris Martin would be a great test, but at the same time, we don't really know much about what I saw about Gary Russell. I still kind of walked away, and I don't know how you felt about this or anybody else. We're going to open up the phone lines. I see the lines are filling up, but I really felt like I still don't know Gary Russell. I know that he's got hand speed. I know that he could throw a good large amount of punches. But I still don't know whether or not he can ever get out of being prospect Gary Russell. Gabriel, I don't know what you thought.
I felt the same thing. It's funny. Yeah, before. Guy can't punch back. And it's fascinating. Who needs to dominate him? But there's something missing. I remember early on they talked about Gary's hands being brittle. The point where he kind of declared his hands were fine. Like, I mean, there's an interview we did, and we kind of talked about it as being akin to when you turn pro as opposed to being an amateur. You take some nicks and some bruises and some hurts you didn't in the amateurs. You know, you're switching over, smaller glove, no headgear. You're fighting men as opposed to boys, you know, or people your age. But then, so he was like, all right, I'm good. But, you know, I really haven't seen that explosive power that can get somebody out of there. He is a distance fighter. There's nothing wrong with that. But this fight was just, all those fights, you know, they just felt like they were just contractual obligations. We knew Chris Martin wasn't going to win. We knew all those guys weren't going to win.
Right.
Kind of, you know, it was just strange to watch. And, you know, you think about, people ask, is boxing fixed? Well, kind of.
Oh yeah, in a lot of ways. I mean, if you look at the sport and you look at it correctly, the matchmaker's job. A promoter brings a fighter and says, "Hey, look, I got this prospect. I need to sharpen up his skills. I need to make him look good. We need to make progress with this guy so that we can build him up for to become a bigger attraction." So in a lot of ways, if you kind of read between those fine lines, is, hey, get him somebody that he can beat. Right? That was in terms of,
right,
you know, 10 years ago, maybe. You know, it's not that long. It's not a long-lived thing that this was basically a plan of how to build a fighter. But within those lines, it's changed with Al Heyman's hands. Al Heyman is more like, hey, get me a fight for this guy, where he can win. Now, that goes into my next thing here, really quick, okay? Because if you notice, on Leaving the Ring, I've been dishing out a few articles. One of the articles that I'm writing about is because of Steven Adonis Superman Stevenson just fought as well, and I was having a conversation with a couple of fight fans, and they were like, "Man, he looked really bad." But here's my thing, and here's my I'm going to pose this question for anybody calling in right now. 347-215-7598. Here's my question to anybody out there, okay? If you really think about it, is it really the fighter's fault that they're not looking great, like Gary Russell or Donna Stevenson, or is it really Al Heyman, Gabriel? Look at the way they've been matchmaked, and look at the way when they're on a roll, like Stevenson, and even with Danny Garcia, okay, they're automatically kind of put at a halt. Like, Gary Russell should have been at a certain peak already. The answers to our questions should have been already answered. We should be moving on to the next thing in terms of what champion out there should he be facing or complaining about that he's not facing a particular champion because he's just that good. But we're almost put at this roadblock because Al stops it from moving. He almost puts it at the station and he parks it for some reason. It's like a brand new train with a bunch of brand new carts that you can load cargo up, but he parks it instead and he just rails it out to the side and he holds it there. And while holding it there, the weather comes down on it and it begins to give it wear and tear. It starts to take off the paint. It starts to take off the value of what we thought was brand new, that had the chance to go the distance or had the chance to do something. So my question is, how much is the blame to the in terms of progression to where Al Heyman is doing to them of even getting to that point of progression? Gabriel?
Yeah, I think that's always been the knock on him, you know, and you know, at least among the guys that have been talking about him this whole time. So he's not really developed anybody, and he hasn't really moved them very well. He's also got the mandatory curse, I believe, going back to Ricardo Mayorga and Vernon Forrest, where his guys just get iced by the first tough opponent that's, you know, that is a mandatory offense, or you know, there was a forced fight like you know, Danny Jacobs versus Dmitry Pirov. One of the sadder cases just off to the side, and just a guy that I wish was still with us. You know, I don't know where Dmitry Pirov went, but yeah, I think it is. It's weird to me. Al has seemingly all the parts, right? He's got the money to hire all those people, an unprecedented amount of people that made Jim Lampley make him the person of the year, which I thought was weird. I get that he was kind of he was satirizing Al Heyman. We can get to that later. But he's got the money to get all these people. He's got the ability to pull strings with the networks to get people to pay these guys ridiculous amounts of money for mismatch fights. But the thing that's missing is the promotional skills. He uses guys like, you know, Goosen, like you noticed his fights this weekend were Goosen promotions, or some of them. And, you know, I'm going, are these Goosen fighters or are these Al Heyman fighters? But he places them, and guys do it. You know, I think it's for like a flat fee. They let him use the promoter's card or promoter's license. And you know, Lou DiBella did that for years with Jermaine Taylor and Andre Berto. But you notice, it's like he had the middleweight champion of the world, did Jermaine Taylor and Young. But, like, they made all these crazy moves. And I think Lou would have made other fights if he could have and developed him a little better. I think Lou was a really smart boxing guy. But Al did other things with him. And look how they wrecked Jermaine Taylor. And people can say what they want about him facing 154-pounders, but, you know, Kasina Uma was no joke. And, like, Gennady Golovkin, you know, was not given all he could handle, but that was a tough fight. And that's, the, you know, the most fearsome guy in the sport, getting an older Kasina Uma. So, like, you know, I think all the looking at what Al does overall, it seems obvious to me that they're kind of breaking the Ali Act, and that he's removed that firewall by creating the advisor position. He's
right.
He's circumvented the firewall between the manager and the promoter. But by using these kind of smaller market guys, getting them paid well enough to go along with the scheme, and, you know, moving fighters through them, and people see their name on the banner, and everybody's happy. But ultimately, is that making better fighters? No, not at all. Is it good for the sport? I don't think so. And is it illegal? Yeah, I think it is. But, you know, who's going to prove it? Who's going to take him to the wall? I mean, people are busy making him person of the year. Well, I think, you know, Kevin Ioli, or no, it was the Boxing Writers Association, made Al the manager of the year last year. And I'm like, well, is he an advisor or manager? Because it seems like these guys signed an advisory contract. So if he's got a manager's license, cool, but that's not what he's calling himself. That's
right.
All. Just
right.
An ugly, complicit web.
It is. Let's pass in some fight fans here really quick on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with the area code 818. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother? 818, you out there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, bro.
What's
on
man?
Your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing? This was Devin Avila Sr., man.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, not much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you guys. Happy holidays.
Same here.
Happy holidays.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, brother.
What's on your mind?
No. You know what? Actually, Emily told me to call you guys. I don't know if you guys were expecting me or...
Oh, Jose. I'm sorry. You know what? Because, I don't know why everything's breaking. It's Jose Benavides, you said, right?
Yes, senior.
Oh, senior. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? Hey, thanks for calling in. I wasn't sure you were going to call in. She never texted me back and told me. She told me that Ruiz was, but didn't say you were going to call in on like that. Hey, thanks for calling in. Great. Cool. Well,
we got you on
here.
Just to make it clear, this is Jose Benavides Sr., the father of
Senior,
Jose Benavides
yeah.
Sr.
Yeah, yeah. The father, right? Yeah. Yeah, we've had one a few times here. No problem,
yeah, well,
man.
Well, this is great, man. I just came out last night from Brazil, man. You know, I had a UFC fighter fighting in Brazil, a TV Dalloway fighting Machida. I'm trying to, you know, get some sleep. But it's just great, man. You know, I heard you guys wanted to talk to us, so it's a pleasure, you know, being here with you guys.
Great, man. Hey, first off, let me ask you this, because I know your son was sick last week. How's he doing now? Is he feeling a lot better?
Yeah, you know what? You know, he got a little cold, but everything's going well. Yeah, right now I think he's shopping a little bit. Like I said, I just got back from Brazil. He's shopping right now for Christmas. You know, he has to love brothers, you know, and mom and all that. So right now I think he's shopping. Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, so, you know, the reason I wanted to have you on, because obviously there was a little bit of controversy with your son. And then it got even a little bit more controversial when – it was tweeted out by Dan Rafael that you had went over to Mauricio Herrera's camp and had said to Mauricio Herrera that, "Hey, you beat my son." So I wanted to ask you, what was the conversation between you and the camp of Mauricio Herrera, and how did the information get twisted and sent out wrong?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you know, I had to make some videos about that, and I had to talk to people about that. I hadn't really had the opportunity to talk to anybody because I was in Brazil. I had no reception. I had nothing really over there. But, you know, what happened is, you know, they gave us almost the same dressing room. We were next to each other. That those two dressing rooms were, you know, they were together there, you know. So we came in. We were happy. We were celebrating, you know. And Mauricio Herrera was up right next to our door, and, you know, he was saying, "Well, you know what, you guys got to give us a rematch, you know, we give you a rematch." And he was talking a lot of stuff, you know, and, you know, like me, man, I'm not disrespectful. I don't want to disrespect nobody. And, you know, and I walked to him. We were, like, close. I didn't go to them. We were right there in the same, almost in the same dressing room. And, you know, what I told him, you know, I thought, you know, first of all, sir, you know, I want to thank you guys for the opportunity. Mauricio Herrera, I think, was in the bathroom taking a shower or something like that. I told him, listen, you know, Mauricio Herrera is a great fighter. He's a good fighter. He's one of my favorite fighters, you know, and I want to thank you guys for the opportunity. Certainly, no problem. We'll definitely give you a rematch. I think you guys deserve a rematch, you know. There's no problem, you know. But first of all, I want to thank all of you, and I think Herrera's a great fighter, but I would never, ever, in my mind, I was 100% sure that we won that fight, you know. I was a little bit worried because Junior was going a little bit to the ropes, and I heard the commentary people that saying that we were down by 3 rounds. And, of course, you know, I got a little panic, and I told Junior, you got to get stay off the ropes, you know. The judges might be seeing that he's hitting you. I know that he's not hitting you, you know, because you're blocking most of those punches, you know. But I don't know what they think, but they're – the commentary people are saying that you're down by 3 rounds. So, you know,
so let me ask you this.
Two ways. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Jose, because obviously I'm going to tell you what I saw with my eyes, okay? I saw that the first rounds were obviously going to Mauricio. Mauricio was doing his thing. Your guys' game plan looked like was to try to tire out the veteran fighter. And it looked like Jose was trying to figure him out in there, you know, trying to figure out how to take away the jab to the stomach, how to take away the overhand right. Have you had a chance to watch the fight over in the replay or no?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yes,
so
I have. Yeah,
okay.
Because,
so let
know,
me ask
always,
you.
Yeah.
Right. So let me ask you, was the plan to was the plan to give him some rounds in order to figure him out, or was Jose having some difficulty trying to figure him out, and that's why it took so long for him to try to finally come alive and do an X amount of things that looked like it was succeeding for him?
Yeah, well, the plan, you know, was to use that jab, keep that distance, try to break him down little by little to the body. And, you know, he does have a good jab to the body. The plan was that, to keep that distance. But at the same time, you know, we had to see the speed. We had to see what he had. But, yeah, that was the plan, to make him tire a little bit too, go to the ropes a little bit, not too much, you know, and try to, you know, he comes, he throws a lot of punches, wear him out a little bit, and little by little try to throw some uppercuts inside, you know, as soon as he was putting pressure. But I think Junior kind of did it a little bit more than what the plan was, and then come on the later rounds, maybe like the third, fourth round, come and now try to box a little bit and keep him out. By that time, risk a little bit more and throw some more body shots and wear him out a little bit more.
When do you think that the rounds started to turn around for your son? When did you think that you guys finally started to figure out Mauricio Herrera? Or was it really all the way down to the nail you felt, or your whole team felt, you know what, I think we're really behind, or no, we're in the clear. We're winning this fight.
I felt really comfortable, like, the first three rounds. But after hearing, you know, the commentary people saying, you know, that we were behind, you know what? Then we started doing something a little bit different, because I told him, dude, you got to fight in the middle of the ring, you know. After the third round, I think that's when he started, you know, working a little bit more. Even though, I mean, when he does good, I want him to do better all the time, you know. You're always going to hear me in the corner, you know, Callum, we need a knockout. We need to work harder. We came here to fight, you know. We got to take his dog away, you know. And that's what I was doing the whole night, you know. I felt comfortable. I felt that we were winning. I felt that we were hitting with the clearer shots, you know, and he was throwing a lot of punches. Herrera was throwing a lot of punches. Junior was blocking most of them. And I, like I said, you know, I thought we were connecting the more clear shots, I think. I wasn't really sure about what the judges were scoring, somebody that was more aggressive or the other one that was hitting the clear shots and more effective, you know. So you don't know until, you know, I mean,
right.
If it goes to decision, you know, I mean, you don't know what the judges are going to see, the guy that was throwing a lot of punches or the one that was more aggressive, you know. Don't get me wrong, Herrera's a good fighter. He's a difficult fighter. He throws a lot of punches, but I don't think with Junior, he was not that effective. Like he was with Danny Garcia and Provonikin, you know, you can see the face also, too. That says a lot, you know.
Jose, let me ask you this real quick, just to clarify this, because I am getting a bunch of tweets about saying that. Did you say that Mauricio Herrera won this fight, beat your son, or no? I just want to clarify
once
that.
Once again, like I've been saying again, I would never, ever say that, you know. Like I said, I thought 100% we won the fight. You know, even though when it goes to decision, you have no idea what the judges are going to say. And
right.
every corner, you always think that you won. You always, in your mind, we won. Until they say the scorecard. I never said they won. I would never say that, you know. In my mind, I knew we won, but we had to hear for the judges. What were they going to score, you know? Like I said, you know, we were happy that we won that fight. I think we won the fight clearly in my eyes. But like I said, we have to wait for the judges when it goes to a decision.
So how do you guys, let me ask, I mean, obviously you haven't had a chance to celebrate, or have you guys celebrated? And if so, with the huge response from fans out there that have said, you guys didn't win this fight, how do you guys feel about that? Because obviously nobody wants to win a title with such controversy at the same time and feel like, you know what, we, it's almost like, how could I say, like if I was given something that shouldn't be mine, but I feel
exactly.
Like it's mine, but at the same time I got to prove it. Do you guys feel like, man, you
yes.
know what,
yes.
I kind of want to give the belt back and redo this all over again. Do you guys feel like that?
Yes, you know what, we felt, like I said, you know, that we won that fight. We did what we had to do. But, yeah, you know, like when I was in Brazil, I was looking at everything, you know, every little comment, I've been following everything, what he's been saying and all that. And it just feels bad, you know, because we didn't want to win this way. You know, we want to show the people that, you know, we belong there. Yeah, the kid, you know, he's only 22 years old, you know. It was a big, big step up for us. We were an underdog, you know. People said that we were going to lose, that he was too much, that
right.
was the crazy idea of me getting that size, that he was going to get schooled, he was going to get knocked out, he was going to get beat bad, you know, and all that, you know. In my heart, we knew we were going to win, you know. A lot of people don't know how much this kid has sacrificed since he was 6 years old. He had no childhood. You know, he's been working. So that made me comfortable to get this fight. They were saying that I was crazy to get this fight. And it feels terrible, you know. And that's why I told him, definitely, we'll give you a rematch. No problem, you know. We didn't know. I didn't even know. A lot of people didn't know that he could go 12 rounds, you know. But he did, you know. And I think he had no problem. Now he's more... Now his confidence is better, you know. I think we could definitely win him and maybe even stop him, because I think he has the tools to stop him, I think. But he was holding back. He didn't want to get tired that much. But now, you know, I think we want this rematch, actually, you know. And I did tell him that I wanted the rematch. I haven't heard from them. Now he's saying that, no, he doesn't want to give us a rematch. He wants bigger things. He wants a rematch with Danny Garcia, Provonikin, you know what I mean, because those are the fights that he's looking for. You know, I'm like, dude, if you – think you beat this kid quick, I mean, easy, why not get a rematch, you know?
Right. I mean, I thought that's what he wanted, was a rematch with your son, get that title back, but you're saying that you're hearing that they don't want the rematch, they want to go after bigger and better things, right?
Exactly. I accepted the rematch. I said, yeah, definitely, we need to get a rematch, you know. I told him, definitely, I think you deserve a rematch, definitely, let's do a rematch, you know. Nobody has talked to me, nobody has said anything about it, you know, like I said, you know. You know, he's been in a couple of radio stations saying that, oh, that I said that I felt that he won. And then somebody asked him, there's another interview too that they said, did he really say that? He's like, well, not really, but it sounded like, you know, come on, man. You know what I mean? Now you're going to change the whole story, you know. But believe me, man, every fighter, you don't lose. You're not going to think about losing, you know, until they give the scorecards. Nobody's going to really say, well, I think I lost. You know, come on, you know what I mean? He never heard my son, you know. I think my son heard him a couple of times, you know. I think we won, and I always thought he won, you know. I had no doubt, you know. But like I said, you know, we had to wait for the judges to give the scorecards.
Now, you know, Jose, I think that most fans, to win back the fans that right now, because it left such bad taste with a lot of fans out there. I mean, I've seen it on Instagram. I mean, it's really taken over a lot of the social media. Folks out there where that's, you know, he's the robbery of the year and all that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Is this something you form a campaign of saying, we're not going to fight anybody unless we give this guy, Mauricio Herrera, a rematch so we could settle the score? Do you feel that that's the necessary way of doing things to gain the fans back that have walked away because they feel that? I've talked to a few people that are from your area, and they're like, man, I'm really happy he won, but at the same time, we didn't want to win it like this. How do you get them back? Make the campaign of saying, we're going to stick to our guns. We're not taking any other mandatory. We're not taking any fights until we get this fight again with Mauricio Herrera and we settle the score.
Well, you know what? It is a bad taste, like you said, you know. We did tell him. I did tell him that I would give him the rematch. And you know, I think that it's half and half. He does have his people. We do have our people that they're so happy that we won, and he has his people that are sad. And you know what? I think, like I said, you know, I did offer him the rematch. But now he's, you know, I'm not going to go to the level, and you're never going to see me talking bad about him and saying this and that. You know, I just don't want to give a bad example for my kids also. And we're not like that. We work so hard to be here, you know.
Right.
I'm not gonna say nothing bad. He's a great fighter. He's a good fighter. Nothing has been given to him, you know. He worked so hard for that. I like the kid. I like that, you know, the way he fights, you know. I'm never gonna talk bad about him. I did give him the rematch at home, but now he's talking too much stuff, you know, that sometimes it want to make me say things that I'm not, you know, that's not coming from my heart, you know, because he's talking a lot of stuff. All the people are talking a lot of stuff, you know. So, I mean, I did tell them that I would give them the rematch. And they haven't come to me, and they haven't said anything. I think we're going to do better. on a rematch, you know. And there's, I mean, the offer is still there, you know. I mean, they just got to call us and, you know, set up a time and try to talk to our promoters and make it happen.
There you go.
You know, Bruce Trampler and those guys at Top Rank, you know, you get the win with Herrera. However the fans feel about it, do you think they kind of know that maybe you just – this is one of those cases of you look good in this one and, you know, you win this one, look good in the next one. And you guys just kind of move forward? I mean, is that scenario entirely possible?
You know what, man, like I said, you know, I think we want this fight, you know, whatever comes. We've got to work harder. We've got to show the people, you know, that Jose Benavidez Jr. has talent and he belongs here. We just got to prove ourselves and we've got to work hard and, you know, give people exciting fights. And we're fighters. We're not boxers. We're not runners. You know, we come to fight. Unfortunately, this fight, you know, it was different, you know, but we're ready to go to war, man. We are ready to give people good fights. And, I mean, like I said, you know, that was a big step up. I don't know where we're going to go. I believe in my son that he's going to continue getting other titles, but we won't know until he fights other fighters. And we'll take anybody. Like before we fought Herrera, we were offered a fight with Jesse Vargas. I got the fight. We talked to the camp. They did not want to take the fight. Then they gave us Brandon Rios. I thought that was a very risky fight, a very dangerous fight, and we said yes. And Brandon Rios accepted the fight, but HBO said that, no, you know, the kid needs a little bit more, maybe a fight or two. But then Jose Benavidez fought in Phoenix, Arizona. He stopped his guy, like, in the second round, and they called us right away to fight Brandon Rios because Chavez had problems with his visa. And I told him, no, that's too soon in a week. There's no way I'm going to fight in a week. We need a whole camp for it. So that's when they gave us Herrera. You know, but I mean, this kid is ready. You know, he was ready to make that step up and see what he has.
Let me ask you something. I'm kind of confused. Did you guys fight for the interim WBA World Light Welterweight title?
Yes.
Well, doesn't Jesse Vargas and Danny Garcia also have that belt?
I crazy? Think that's the world title. There's an interim and there's a world title. I believe that. Yeah, so he's number one. We have the interim. He's the champion of that belt. And we do want to fight Jesse Vargas. I think that would be a great fight for us, too, you know. But like
that's an interesting fight.
Yeah, I think that would be great. And, you know, we'll see. You know, like I said, at this point, you know, man, we're ready to fight anyone. If Herrera wants a rematch, I already told him we'll give him a rematch or whatever. We just got to keep going and prove our people, you know, if he has it or not. You know, I believe that he has it, and I think he's ready now. Yeah, he's young, but, I mean, styles make fights, you know?
Are you guys happy at welterweight? Do you think, I mean, at light welterweight, do you think it's coming? Because he's a tall kid, you know, that he's going to be a welterweight.
You know, he felt great. You know, the camp was great. You know, he wasn't tired at all. I think, like I said, Mauricio is a good fighter and a tough fighter. He gives people, and he's going to give a lot of people problems, you know, because he is a good fighter. At 140, there's no problem. We got that fight at 140. He came at 138. I don't think there's a problem with it, you know. At 140, I don't think he feels comfortable. We could fight at 140, 147. I think it's a good way for Junior to fight at whatever. Both weights are good.
Well, what do you think in terms of the fight? I mean, this is a fight that you come away, you know, with the win, rematch and all that stuff aside, but the things he learned in this fight, he's not going to be able to apply until kind of further down the road. I mean, there's probably some lessons in there, some things he's seen that he's never seen before. Would you agree?
Wow, yeah, definitely, man. You know, he's a baby, you know, he's a baby. He's 22 years old. Man, we have a lot to improve. We got to, I think from this fight, we learned so much from this fight, you know. So much that he had no idea. I learned a lot. He learned a lot. We all learned a lot from this fight. I think the only thing that we can do is just get better and better and better as we get other fighters, different styles. We got to keep learning, you know. In this business, once you stop learning, I think that's it, you know. But I think he has a lot of room to improve, and he's going to learn a lot, you know. Like I said, he's just a baby, you know. I think he's 22 years old, you know. I think he's just going to get better and better and better.
Well, there you go. You're here over here on Leaving the Ring. You know, Benavidez, they want that rematch. They're asking for that rematch. It's now. I think it's it's set for the Herrera camp to answer back and move forward and see if we can get you guys both back in there and settle things where it counts most, which is in that ring. Jose, I want to thank you very much again for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it, and I wish you guys a Merry Christmas. And I hope that rematch comes to fruition. I hope that everything happens. I hope you guys are able to get back in that ring and settle this controversy, this argument of who should really be holding on to that title.
Definitely. I want to thank you guys for inviting me to your show, and I want to thank everybody for the support. Everybody that's been supporting us from day one for all these years, and happy holidays to everyone. And I want to also thank Herrera for the opportunity for this fight. You know, like I said, and I still think that he's a good fighter. He's a great fighter. And I got nothing but respect for his whole team and all the whole people, all the fans.
Thank you, brother. You have a good night.
Awesome, man. Thank you. You have a great holiday. Take care.
Thank you, son. Thank you, bro.
Well, there you go.
It's been a minute, Jose, since I talked to him.
What was that?
I said it's been a minute since we've talked to him. That was pretty cool.
It's been a while since we've talked to both Jose's, to tell you the truth. I've always liked them both. You know, I think they're great guy, great people and stuff. And, it kind of sucks, man, in the situation that they're at, you know, in terms of your fight, like you said, his son's never had a childhood. This is what they worked for. Even his son, David, too, just fought, I believe, this past weekend as well, and was successful. But, it sucks that these guys, they put their all into this sport. And the dream is to win a title. The dream is to make it to the peak, to make it to the top. But when they get there, the door's almost halfway open, and right when they thought they're going to get in, they're stuck in between that, They're stuck. They're one foot in, one foot out, and it's got to be frustrating. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's got to be really frustrating going like, wow, we worked to get here, but now that we're here, it was really set upon a controversy because of these judges. You know, the judges made the determination of who was going to gain that belt, right? It wasn't them. They didn't judge the fight. You know, it was these judges. Three guys that were left in the hands of three guys, a set of six eyes, and they made the judgment call, which a lot of folks felt that it wasn't the right judgment. And they're the ones that get the backlash from that judgment. Rather than the judges, they got the backlash from it. So it's got to really suck. Really got to suck.
Well, it's generally what our culture does, you got to blame the wrong guy. Like, blaming drug users for the big problem in America,
Right.
It doesn't make any sense, The judging problem has been a problem for, forever. So going all the way back to when, they'd have the local sheriff be the ref and the judge. I remember for a long time it was just the ref was the judge. I mean, how corrupt was that? I think Wyatt Earp was a boxing ref for a time. But now in our modern days, there's no firewall between the promoters and the judges. So the people that are paying for the promotion, the promoter, are paying the salaries of the judges. And as long as that exists, it's going to be political machinations made. Maybe they're not going to outright bribe the guys. I tend to think that just happens. Throw something extra on the side. But nobody really can prove it. It's probably just money in an envelope. That's what drives me crazy about guys like Bob Arum, who's been in the sport for 30 years. I mean, the horror stories Bob Arum must know compared to the rest of us would be probably staggering to your average boxing fan. He's the first guy to say, oh, of course there's no corruption. I've known these judges for 30 years. Well, therein lies the first problem. You've known them for 30 years. You're supposed to be impartial. It's weird, though. It's, as long as the sport's going to be subjective like this, we're always going to have things like this, especially, given all the things that is laid out. I don't know what the solution is. I kind of like that solution, Joe Cortez's company. I don't know where that went, having the judges be raised up. But, again, they could be sitting, strapped to the fighter. It doesn't matter, if Bob Arum gets to pick them. They're going to see what he wants them to see. I think we should do the GoPro camera on the head for all three boxing judges. Just turn that on, have somebody else control it remotely so they can't just turn it off. And then we know exactly what they're looking at. We know what their vantage point was. and we can start setting up with the commission some sort of way to review these guys when they make a really terrible call. I think it's an actual realistic, doable solution to bad judging, other than, you know, vetting everybody's bank accounts. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. I'm calling in. Calling in Andrew Ruiz right now, so give me a second.
Yeah, I just think I mentioned it with Steve on the next round, and he had about the same excited response as you did. But I think it's something we need to move into the modern day. If we're going to be that kind of gray area about the way we score the fights, you know, three guys decide and you know, kind of anonymously amongst themselves, you know, who wins a round, and you kind of tally it up. If we're going to do that, then there's got to be some sort of other accountability mechanism in place.
Absolutely. Let me patch in our next guest, Andy Ruiz, the Destroyer. Are you here? Are you there with us, brother?
Yeah, I'm right here, brother.
How you doing, man? First off, hey, thanks for coming on Christmas Eve, bro. I really appreciate it. I'm pretty sure you're running around and trying to get to the family, or you're out there trying to get some last minute shopping done, man. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here on the show.
Yeah, no problem, dude. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm actually right here in Imperial Valley, right here with my family, and, you know, we're just right here celebrating Merry Christmas and all that.
Well, first off, congratulations on this past Saturday, your victory. I think that, you know what, look, I think I think everybody can agree the boxing skills are obviously there. But I'm pretty sure, Andy, you've heard the criticism, right?
Yeah, of course, of the way that's always been the issue. And, you know what, this fight was an experience, and, you know, and that's what me and my team, we're going to do. I'm going to start cutting the weight and all that, and start being more healthy.
So, you know, when I talk to fight fans, especially that Saturday night, because, you know, we had the Al Haymon invitation, that was really boring, but it seemed like the more majority of fans were really excited to see you get back in there. And, you know, there was fight fans that emailed and left me messages, and they were like, man, this guy's so talented. I mean, and there's nothing to take away from you on that. You got balance, you got combinations, you got fast hands. But I think the overall conversation always leads after they say, man, this guy's got fast hands, he's got talent, is what's up with the weight? Why can't he lose the weight? So let me ask you this, bro, because I was talking to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. I'm pretty sure you know Gabriel Montoya. And I go, I had to pose this question, so I'm going to pose it to you right now. If you were to shed the weight that media and fans perceive you to shed in order to have this trim physique boxer body, do you think that realistically you would be a heavyweight, or do you think that your body would have to trim down to either a cruiserweight or even a lightweight? What's your thoughts about that?
I'm not sure, because I haven't hit that limit yet, but there's only one way to find out, and just to lose the weight and stronger.
Hey, Andy, it's Gabe Montoya. I remember watching you at the Wild Card. I mean, you were pretty big when you first came in. I remember you were boxing to lose weight, and
yeah,
and
I was
serious.
Like 340 pounds that time.
Wow!
I don't think people understand how far you've come.
Right?
Like, you know, when they're like, "Dude needs to lose weight," it's like, dude, he's been losing weight for a long time. At this point, now that you're kind of like, you know, developing as a prospect into a contender, hopefully, and then you're kind of now finding that ceiling. Is that really what this period is about now? Is just kind of finding out what your optimum fighting weight, you know, what peak condition really is?
Yeah, well, I've been doing everything, running and all that, but I do need to cut down the weight, because my last fight I was at 272, I believe, and then this time I came out at 267, and you know, I'm going down. But for this last fight, I hurt my hand, and a lot of people know how I fight. I throw combinations. I'm aggressive and all that.
Right.
But My hand was really bothering me, and but I did the best I can with one hand and all that. But a lot of people are probably thinking, oh, well, it's because of his weight. That's why he didn't fucking throw punches or anything like that. But no, it was the hand. It was a good experience. It was tripped out.
So let me ask you this.
What round did you hurt your hand? What round?
Like in the third round, I believe. Ever since they stopped throwing the right hands, that's when I hurt it. And then I was just using the jab, trying to throw the hook. But maybe that's why a lot of people are. Well, ever since I was young, everybody talked about the weight and all that.
Right.
But.
So let me ask you this, you know, how far off do you think people are? Because, I mean, it's easy for somebody to go, oh, he's got to lose weight, he's got to do this. But how far off when they try to make Andy Ruiz as a comparison to Chris the Nightmare? Do you think that's really way off where in terms Chris was more of a, you know, a guy that just lacked motivation to train sometimes in the beginning when he got the stardom? Do you think they're way off in terms of comparing you to him?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, we both have the same issue. You know, they would talk shit about Chris Arreola's weight and then my weight too. So it's kind of we're kind of the same thing. But they just want to see me chiseled. That's what the people want. They want to see me chiseled and make the flabbiness solid. And I'm pretty sure that's what they want. But if I lose a lot of weight, I agree with that person that said I'll probably go down to cruiserweight maybe, but I just need to tighten up.
It's got to be frustrating, man, to tell you the truth, where, you know what, I mean, let me ask you this. Have you ever, like, gotten the back of your mind and go, like, okay, dude, I know that I got to lose the weight, but what about the skill level? I mean, shit, give me the compliment of the skill level. My skills are there. Why is nobody not focusing on that? Have you ever thought in that term?
Yeah, a lot of times actually, but that's what I was telling them. Look, I'm chubby and all that, but I'm knocking out guys. You know, I'm winning. I'm still beating people up. The chubbiness wasn't getting in the way so far, but there's people that hate and there's people that show me love too.
So true.
Yes, I mean,
so true.
I think it's unfair to compare you to Chris Arreola because it's not like, I mean, the weight's an issue for you, but it's kind of, I mean, you've come down so far, 340. People can't even fathom that. And to get to
a
place where you're boxing 12 rounds and you manage your energy well, you didn't look sloppy to me, like huffing and puffing, like terrible. You know, it looked like, and with Chris would run off from training camps. He would just disappear for 3 or 4 weeks. I'm pretty sure that's not the problem with you. Do you think it's just a matter of maybe you've gone so far in this one direction, losing weight, now it's just kind of time to shock your body, try some new type of exercises, different sprint training or whatever, start to mix it up and maybe just kind of get to another level that way? Have you hired somebody?
Yeah. Actually, we had a physical trainer, but he left back to Spain and he didn't help me out for this fight. But we are going to bring him back and we'll see after my hand heals, and hopefully for the next fight, I'm going to give the people what they want.
I just wonder, like, you know, I mean, what is the ideal weight, Andy? Do you think that's going to be enough where people say, okay, he's at that limit? I mean, you know, I mean, if you're banging out guys and you're doing what you're supposed to do where it counts in the ring, don't you think that gradually wins over the fans? Or are we so caught up with image that you have to look this way in order for you to really be a super threat in the minds of fans? I mean, I don't get that.
Yeah, that I agree too. I don't know what they think, man. I thought it would be more entertaining seeing a chubby guy beating up this very muscle guy, you know?
Right.
I think that would be more exciting.
I don't disagree. You know, I mean, it's You got skills, man. I mean, there's no doubt of that. There's no doubt of that. And you throw combinations, which is kind of rare for heavyweights. You know, you kind of fight like a little man when you're a big man. But I think the arts are kind of on.
But for this last fight, I didn't really show my talent a lot at all. Actually, I didn't show any of that, and I'm kind of disappointed that I couldn't get the knockout or like I usually do. But it was really difficult trying to fight with one hand, and that's what stopped me stopping him, because I couldn't throw my combinations or throw my right hand or. It was
kind of
hard.
When you hurt your hand, what was the most that you had to do to overcome? Did it make you think more in the ring? How much of the game plan did it throw you off?
Well, I kind of had to switch up the game plan, because everything that my dad and my coach was telling me to do, I couldn't do. I was telling them that it hurt. The only thing I could kind of do is I couldn't even block a lot, because every time he'll block, he'll hit the glove, and my hand was throbbing, it was hurting, and I couldn't really block with it either. And throwing the jabs, throwing the left hook, and trying not to show the opponent that I'm hurt, because I didn't want him to know that I was hurt, and trying to go full throttle, so I kind of had to be smart with that too.
What's the schedule look for you in 2015? I mean, it looks like they're starting to move you, a bit closer in terms of testing you out and seeing, you know, where you're going to go out in your career. What's the plan?
The plan, hopefully the plan was that I was supposed to get a shot for a world title, hopefully for December 15. But I need to go talk, and well, after Christmas and New Year's over, we're going to talk and see where we're at.
Well, there you go. Andy Ruiz here on Leaving the Ring Radio, answering every question that we have, and he's answering it very honest, man. And I got to tell you, bro, I mean, definitely am a fan. I sit there, and I watch you, and I go, man, this guy's got – there's no denying that he's got major skill stepping into that ring. I hope you're able to overcome these fans that are questioning you, and even the media that are kind of bagging on you about your weight issue, because I think if you overlook all that, you could see that there's a very polished fighter stepping into that ring and is taking care of business. Anyways, Merry Christmas, brother. I hope everything goes great, man. I can't wait to see what you're up to next year in 2015.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, and Merry Christmas to all you guys too, and we'll see what they give me for 2015. Hopefully it's something exciting, and I get to fight one of the top elite guys, so I can prove myself and prove everyone else, and just to shut them up.
Let me ask
you
one last thing on your way out. Looking at the next year, who wins, Severn or Wilder?
I think Severn has a good chance to win if he just fucking stays low and throws when Wilder throws, so because he has like a longer reach, and I kind of think Severn could take it if he does it good.
I love the fact. I gotta tell you this. I love the fact that Andy Ruiz has the regular Chicano. First word to start off his sentence is fucking. That's how you know he's Mexican American.
Really.
Fucking.
Oh, fucking.
Hey.
No, no, it's good.
Cable
radio.
Hey, you hungry? Fucking, I'm hungry. Hey, you hungry? Hey, fucking, I'm hungry, bro. Let's do it. Let's do it right now. Órale, brother. Hey, thanks again, man, for coming on, bro. Have a great Christmas with our familia. And I can't wait till I get off the air, dude. I got pozole waiting for me. The whole works right now, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, man. Well, thanks, dude. And whenever you guys want me to get in here and I'll talk and all that and see what's happening.
Hey, well, fucking, we will, bro. Orale, all right? Take care, man. Take care, bro.
All right, thanks, bro.
Make sure that pozole is organic. right?
Organic, right, right.
Organic.
He's here, the destroyer here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Hey, we're gonna go on about another 30 minutes. We're going to start patching in some fight fans. The lines are pretty filled up right now. Let's talk some boxing here. We could talk about Stevenson and even the Al Haymon invitation. That was the title for the next round, so we're going to use it over here. We're going to steal that for a bit here. Let's go with area code 931. You're on live right now. Leaving Ring, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? It's Eduardo from Fort Lauderdale now. How you doing, Gabriel and Dave? How you doing?
Hey, what's
good
up, brother?
Christmas.
How you doing, man?
Doing fantastic. Just finished eating dinner with the family, now with my other family, my boxing family. I just want to talk about boxing class. I'm so glad that the Benavidez family has said all those things. It changes a lot for me because I was really, I wasn't very happy with the decision, as many of other boxing fans. But I know there's a lot of people, so I'm gonna just shoot off the hip.
Go for it.
I like what you guys were talking about earlier about the Haymon and how boxing now is catered to these fucking casuals. I'm sorry for cursing, but these fucking casuals are ruining everything.
Right.
You know, a business, oh, look how much money, and look, you're gonna get paid anyways. I don't want to curse, but you know, there's some bullshit, you know. But boxing's about legacy. It's about testing your greatness, fighting the best, see who king
well,
and
look
not
at the
macho.
Way,
it's a,
right, Eduardo. But
mm-hmm,
look at the way, look at the way our mind's been trained, though. I mean, look at the way social media and television is. It's like the more money you got, the better you are. That's what makes you money. I mean. It go back with the argument that we've had with, you know, for quite some time with Paulo Malignaggi. The guy always falls back and says, "Well, I'm rich, and I'm famous." What does that got to do with anything? It has nothing to do with
anything.
He's
rich. He's rich and famous, but he gets no respect. So who gives a shit? All right.
Exactly.
You got all this money, but you can't buy respect. That's what you're bouncing from Al Haymon's dick to HBO's dick and back to Top Rank's dick. He just wants, as long as he gets coverage. That's all he cares about. Just he wants, look at me. And it's a shame because I respected Paulie as a fighter. I really liked him.
Absolutely.
He didn't win all his fights. But damn it,
absolutely.
He worked hard. He worked hard, damn it. You know? And it's a damn shame. It's a damn, because, yeah, you got money, but you got no substance. I mean, let's talk about real men like Barrera, Morales. Let's talk about Tito Trinidad. Let's talk about Sabalo Sanchez, Alexis Arguello. Let's talk about Holyfield. Those are men. Even Mike Tyson, who lost his big fights, but damn it, he challenged himself. That's a lot more than these young, I don't want to say punks, because, you know, they're just taking a punishment, but they're not testing themselves. They're fighting C-level fighters. It's just like Birdo. It's like everybody's like a Birdo nowadays. It's just like a facade. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
I agree. It's been Birdoed. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know? I mean, it's Haymonized. You know, I think that's really the term. Because, I mean, what is this? I was watching the fights, and it's weird because if I have the opportunity to not watch them live and just review with my wife on the weekend, like, that's kind of what I'm doing these days. You know, I'll spend all Monday just chilling and watching the fights and catching up and taking notes and writing whatever. And watching all those Haymon cards together, watching all that prepackaged shit together over
mm-hmm.
and over again, all the year, because, you know, a lot of times, too, it's like I'm doing a play Saturday night, but I can't watch it later. And so I get to watch it kind of in a different context, and it just looks so prepackaged.
Scripted.
I mean,
scripted.
All
it's
year
scripted.
Long, the A-side's won.
Right.
Like, how many times did the A-side lose this year? That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing at all. It means the fights aren't competitively matched, and there's no mystery. There's no. People talk about they don't want to see open scoring because it takes away the drama of that final moment. And the new, we don't have that moment anymore, regardless of
mm-hmm.
open scoring or not.
You know what I miss? You know what I miss, man? When boxing was on Saturdays, damn it, I used to have two barbecues going off at one time. I used to have about 15 people at my house. We're playing dominoes. We're drinking beer, talking smack, waiting for the fights. I just record things nowadays and go on my about my day anymore. I don't care about these fights. It's sad, and it's a
so
real
true, bro.
Fan.
So
freaking.
Hey, let me tell you this, hermano. Let me tell you this, dude. I was the guy, dude, that on a Saturday night, my brother, all my friends were getting ready to go out, And they were like, yo, you're going to roll with us to the club? And I'd be like, nah, I'll meet you guys after. I'm going to watch the fight. And I would watch the fight before I left. You know,
mm-hmm.
and if I didn't make it to the club or whatever we were planning to go, I didn't make it because the fights were my priority. I mean, you can ask anybody in my family. If there was a function and the fights were on, I made sure to go to the function and leave just enough time mm-hmm. to make it before the fight started.
Always. I was the same way, man. Big fight parties, the whole thing. And now... like, honestly, it used to be just, oh, I'm doing a play, I can't make it, and I kind of got in the habit this last year. But now, you know, especially now that I'm not working at Max Boxing, having to worry about a deadline, having to watch a fight mm-hmm. because I got to write about it, like, it's a blessing. Because watching some of these fights, I mean, you know, like Tarver and Jonathan Banks, which is a Heyman fight, was that one of the worst things you've ever seen? I mean, I'd rather watch John Ruiz in any of his fights
God.
Than that. I mean, it's just
the hook
nothing back. Happening. Even the yeah. Julian Williams fight, which I like Julian. He's a good fighter. But what was the other guy doing? I mean, like,
yeah.
nothing. He threw a jab and got scared that he threw a jab. And it landed.
Yeah.
What are we watching anymore? Every time I watch a human card, I feel like I'm watching a fixed fight. Like a
yeah,
lot
no,
of the time. Not every time, but a lot of the time.
We're watching the World Wrestling Federation. That's what we're watching. We already know the outcome. We already know when they step before the ring, they already know who won. They already know. It's ridiculous. Where's the legacy? Where is the legacy? Where's your pride in your country and your family? And you sacrificed so much of your life as a fighter. These young men, or these men, they sacrificed a whole childhood to make it to this level. You know what? If you don't make it, what's wrong with losing, damn it? Challenge yourself. Challenge
Here's the
yourself.
Sad part.
What the fuck happened?
Here's the sad part about it is that, you know, I had this conversation. I can't remember who I was having it with. And they were like, well, you know what? They're making... $700,000. They're making this. Where else? You know, they're banking it in. Let me tell you this. They're putting it in the bank. But let me ask you this: when all that money is said and done, it's when it's all over, you're not going to be remembered. You're not going to be remembered to be part of this game. You know, I mean, you're going to be in your 50s, and you're going to sit across somebody at the barbershop, and they're going to look at you, and you're going to say, "Do you know who I am?" And they'll be like, "Nah, no, I don't." Do you know who Mike Tyson is? Yeah, I know who Mike Tyson is. Oh, I used to be a fighter too. Really? I never heard of you. Never saw you. That's what it's coming down and laid down to. Because, the fight game, the phrase, the common phrase was, dare to be great. It's not like that anymore. It's dare not to be great, but get paid a lot to act like you were great.
Mm-hmm.
Sad,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
Eduardo, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother.
Yeah, please. Hey, guys. You guys are the
Merry
fucking
Christmas,
shit. Boxing, boxing one percenters. Leave it in the ring, baby. Let's do it. I got your back. Much love and respect to you, Dave. Likewise.
You too, brother. Man, yeah, Merry
brother.
Christmas to you and yours.
Merry
man.
Christmas.
Absolutely.
Igualmente, hermano. Igualmente, hermano.
Peace.
You want to call in? You certainly can. 347-215-75 now or tweet us. Do whatever you want. You can email us at Leave It in the Ring. Don't forget to download the app. And you can leave us a voice message if you caught the show late and you wanted to call in and you know just didn't have time because you know hey it's Christmas Eve everybody's with their families but this past week some more fight fans here on Leaving the Ring 917 you're on live right now Leaving the Ring what's on your mind?
Bah humbug what's up guys this is
Bah humbug
this is Francisco from Boxeo Mundial guys what's going on man
good,
hey
man.
What's up man
how you
what's
doing
what's going on Gabe.
Thank
yeah, you
much,
know, I'm
man.
Listening. I'm listening to your to Emmanuel before talking about the state of boxing, man. I'm one of those guys. I mean, I grew up watching fights since I believe 78. I mean, I was a kid, but I've been watching fights since I was a kid. You know, boxing reminds me of hip hop. You know, like today, I can't even stand to listen to these rappers because they sound like they're going backwards. Like, you know, their skill level. It's not the same, you know. When you listen to Tribe Called Quest or Busta Rhymes or KRS-One or Nas, you know, you listen to lyrical skilled artists, you know.
Yep.
And today you listen to Trinidad James and all these bums, and they sound terrible. and it reminds me of boxing. Boxing has gotten the same way. You know, the sport has been watered down with promoters and networks and making these fights that are one-sided, like you guys said. The skill level of fighters have diminished because we don't have great trainers anymore. Well, I'm not going to say we don't have anymore, but we don't have that many. You know, so now you have these guys that don't want to fight. Like like Andy Lee just finished beating, I can't remember his name right now, but
Matt Korobov,
right? Who Peter Quillin turned down for $1.4 million, a purse that he never even got in any of his three fights as a welterweight champion. I mean, not welterweight champion, as a middleweight champion. My bad. So it's like, what's going on here with these guys that they all got Floyd Mayweatherism? They all don't want to take fights because the fight doesn't make sense. It doesn't make money. You know, it's become that kind of a cliche now where you know, if the fight doesn't make money, they don't make the fight. You know, instead of making the fights that fans want to see, they make fights that we don't want to see. And you know what the problem is, too, is that we buy into these fights no matter what. You know, these fights still sell for some reason. If we didn't buy these fights would not be made. Then these promoters and these guys would be forced to make fights that we want to see. But there's no kind of boycott. There's nothing forcing these guys to do what they have to do to make the sport better.
Here's a food for thought, man, because, you know, we're bringing up Berto. And this is a prime example, dude. This is the thing that gets me, is that if you're going to be part of the sport, like, if you know, if I'm a professional fighter, I'm looking at the overall landscape of what's going on. I'm looking at the do's and the don'ts, right? Andre Berto was getting, $1.4 million to fight an ESPN fighter on HBO, correct? Was really being held back by Al Heyman to kind of chisel up the skills. But by the time he got to that peak where he's supposed to shine and supposed to make the jump up to the next level, he's in a hard fight with Victor Ortiz, and then the next you know it, he's got shoulder problem. Next you know it, he gets knocked out. The next you know it, he's now struggling to hold on to whatever's left of his boxing career. Now, if you look at that, if you really look at that, that $1.4 million is really spending, it's being spent by keeping him in the gym to try to gain something he had never got because it was never given him the opportunity to even get there. That money's being spent for him to try to still reach his dream. Not live the dream, reach the dream. And that's what makes me wonder, fighters, are you not paying attention? Because it's right there in front of you in black and white.
You know, I got to say this. What I was just talking about, hip-hop, like, I'd rather listen to old-school hip-hop. I'd rather watch fights from back in the day. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? If I want to entertain myself and watch, I mean, when was the last time we had a super fight? A real super fight. Not no super hype. I'm talking about super fight. You understand? I mean,
we're
going to hear cricket.
Right, exactly. You know, I think the last time we had super fights was like, going into the late 90s. You know, and when we got to the millennium, that's when it really started to water down. I mean, we had some there, but it was a trickleage of super fights, you know. But other than that, it was disappearing pretty quick, you know.
The problem is that we don't know when we're going to get a good fight nowadays. We don't. If you happen to miss a fight, you'd be like, oh, yo, you didn't catch that fight last night? That fight was really good. And you're like, what? You know, because you expect it to be another, you know, one-sided fight. You know, it's like, you know, if you don't catch the fight, you know, if you don't catch the fight, you might be like, you know, some people would be like, yo, man, that was a good fight. You know, and it'll be a fight that nobody wants to see. It'll be a fight that nobody, these two fighters that who most people don't even know.
It's gonna be like Lewis Tyson when they fight. You know, one of them will still have his faculties and the other one won't.
Right.
You know, or something like that. That's why, you know, I said on the next round of the night, like, regardless of when it happened, the fight lost interest for me after it wasn't signed the first time, really, because they weren't exactly spring chickens then. Now they're, what, 37 and 35? That's what drives me crazy about people. They think that, you know, where did Pacquiao's power go? They talk about as the theory for him being on drugs. That, you know, regardless of how you feel, if he was or he wasn't, and I think a lot of fighters were. And there's a lot of fighters you could point to that were pretty obvious about it, particularly in the 90s during the heyday. But you know, it's just strange to me that nobody accounts for the fact that he's getting older. And Floyd doesn't stop anybody either. He's just getting older and older, other than Victor Ortiz when he wasn't looking.
Right.
Just the fight, I think, shows. I mean, look at Manny. After Hatton, you know, he goes long with Cotto and stops him in 12. Then it's just distance. And this is going back to 2010. The run was short that they're talking about. So I think this fight's going to be a distance fight, probably a boring fight. If Manny can't get to him and it doesn't look as explosive and dangerous early on, and we're talking about a year from now, that fight's going to be terrible. It's going to be like a distance fight, and Floyd's going to gloat forever. I kind of wonder if Bob really even wants to do the fight at all for that reason.
That could be a strong possibility. That's why
there was a fifth factor there with Floyd Mayweather also not wanting to make the fight. I mean, a southpaw that throws 100 punches a round or more. I mean, that's not the kind of fight he wanted. Especially when I believe it was his father that really made him more afraid with telling him not to fight Pacquiao in the first place, because and talking about him being on steroids. Because I don't think it originally came from Floyd. I think it was his father who pretty much put it in his ear. Hey, man, make sure this guy's drug tested before you fight him, you know. So, you know, that's probably why the fight has been extended to what it is. And, you know, it just shows you, I mean, it really shows you how, yet again, you know, something like this would never have happened, you know, I believe 20 years ago. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, and you got this happening now. It's like, and everybody knows about it. People that don't know about boxing know about Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather not wanting to fight each other. It's a joke, you know?
You know, here's the shitty part is that 20 years ago, fans would be ranting, you know, the fighters have to make more decisions of their own career. A fighter needs to have more control of his career. Well, this is the backlash of allowing a fighter like Floyd Mayweather have more control of his career. This is what we get. This is what we ask for. And now we got to live with it. You know, it's that old saying, you know, if you make your bed, you got to sleep in it. And a lot of ways, this is what fans and media have basically created. Francisco, we're going to put you back on hold, bro. Thanks for calling in, man. Really appreciate it, brother.
Bro. Thanks, man. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you guys, too, man. Thanks, man.
You know, normally we do like a not an award show, whatever, but like, you know, what we hope to see in the year 2015, what prospects. I got to tell you this. I just hope to see a better goddamn year for boxing in 2015, man. That's all I give a shit about. I don't even care about anything else. You know
like,
what I mean?
It's like, dude, going playoffs. You know, I just want to win a game. You know, playoffs? That's how I feel. You know, it's just
We're like Raider fans right now. We're like the Raider fans, Joe. We got the win over the San Francisco. We'll take it. We'll take that win. We didn't win shit the whole year, but we'll take that one.
Seriously.
That's what Boston fans are right now, you know?
Most exciting fights, you know, I mean, there's been some, but I mean, yeah. I mean, Andy Lee, you know, Matt Karmboff, that kind of shows when people are willing to risk.
Oh, yeah.
Go for it, you know, what a good fight can be. And that fight was so, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. What I loved about it was it was two seriously heavy hitters. And Steve did a great post-fight interview with Andy Lee. And you could see it. They both were throwing very heavy leather. And they were kind of just gauging to get that right spot. And Andy was looking for that right hook all night, just kind of looking for it. He finally got it. The way, you know, it still went all crazy about him getting it at the left. And he slides out, and boom, lands that perfect right. That's what it's all about for me. You know, and it was glorious, Dave. I got to tell you, you know, it was
absolutely sweet, sweet victory.
Sweet victory for Andy, that's what boxing is all about to me.
Absolutely,
I wanted Andy to win, but I didn't know if he would, and then he pulled it out like that, and it was awesome.
He's our Cinderella
man. More of that in 2015.
He is our Cinderella man. You know, Andy Lee is the Cinderella man for the sport right now. You know, I mean, he's a guy that was written off. Guy wasn't supposed to go anywhere. You know, I mean, he lost his mentor, father-like figure. Let me tell you this, man. Because I was woken up early in the morning to get up, I was going back and listening to a lot of stuff that we've dished out here on Leaving the Ring. You know, interviews, like, in other words, and you know, I came across Emmanuel Stewart's interviews, listening to him breaking down Miguel Cotto, and why Miguel Cotto's face was swelling up and cutting was because there was a strong possibility of what he was dieting with. In other words, like he was drinking a lot of wheat juice, and you know, and I'm just listening. I'm soaking this all in, and I'm like, wow, man, there's so much there, and then I come across Andy Lee, and he says this passage. I didn't write it down. I'll throw out the link of this passage that he throws, that It's not from a book. It's not from the Bible. He got this from a movie, and that's what keeps him motivated. And I just wonder. I wonder if Andy Lee continues to say this passage to keep his motivation and to keep him going forward, along with the wise words of Emmanuel Stewart. Because, you know, he's exactly what this sport was built on, which is passion and hard thought out dreams to accomplish, you know, because for every bump and every bruise that this man received, for every negative comment that was thrown out there, that this guy's never going to get to that end of the finish line, he did it. And he did it his way. He didn't do it with Al Heyman's help. He didn't do it with avoiding fights and getting offered the best great amount of money. He did it a traditional way, which is using his fists. And you got to love a guy like that. You just got to love a guy like that. Whether he holds on to that title for however long, you have to love him for every second and minute and hour that he holds on to it. And then go back and remember that one punch that changed it all for him. That one punch that finally gave him justification why he was doing what he had to do in such a brutal and unforgiving sport. So kudos to you, Andy Lee. We wish you the best. Merry Christmas. Everybody, you have a great night. Enjoy your presents. Enjoy your dinner with your family. Don't drink and drive. Not because you'll spill your beer, because there's a lot of cops out there tonight, man. Be safe. We'll talk to you guys next week. Mr. Montoya, Merry Christmas, brother.
Merry Christmas, Dave. Peace.